So it's time to move to the third and last but not least part of this podcast. CEO of Arryn Business Advisory, the economic and financial management and consulting arm of the Arryn Group, and with a solid experience in your renewable energies, Philip Véry has been working on this issue of the ESG criteria since his arrival at the group. His current reflection on the subject focuses in particular on detailed reporting within organizations. It is his singular and experienced vision that will benefit this discussion on this first episode and this third part. Ladies and gentlemen, Julie Lardy and Philippe Véry.
Thank you, Julien. One thing leading to another, let's now turn our attention to the sensitive issue of data reporting and the question of metrics, briefly mentioned by Stéphane. Philippe, why do we speak about the golden age of ESG data?
Well, I have to come back to the origin of this podcast, because we were thinking to name it the golden age of ESG data. And in history, we speak about golden age for periods blessed with abundancy and peaceful living. This golden age of ESG data that I believe will come, and we are at the dawn of it, is used because many others like me believe that in the next decade, and I would even put an S to decade, so the next decades, ESG-related activities, Senso Largo said, will be reinvigorating the economy and supporting a new abundant and positive period. So you see, I share the optimism of my colleagues on these aspects. And this will be to transforming for the better, but while not changing it, and that's very important, our societal system with a growing layer of ethic, societal awareness, and green respectful behaviors. So we believe in change, let's say.
Why do you say not really changing it?
Well, because people must not be fooled, and I think transparency that we talk a lot about needs to be also clearly said in this aspect. All what happens, and I've been involved in green energy and all what the states has done the last 15 years. I mean, we want to change the society, but we will not change the system. What we do now with ESG is not getting rid of capitalism and getting rid of the perpetual growth as the underlying criteria for capitalism, which is okay. I mean, I have absolutely no feeling against it, no problem, but it needs to be said. It's not like we are changing the world in every aspect. We are trying to use the current system that is still in place, and we don't know how long, and most probably long, and we try to improve and to get better using the system. And this very large initiative of ESG in the financial world is really a good opportunity to do so.
So according to you, this golden age of ESG data will last?
Yes, absolutely. It will last. I said, I think it will take some decades. If you look back, I mean, every industry needs data to perform well. And basically, to properly run, an industry must rely on a set of relevant, replicable, consistent, usable, comparable, and quality data. So data in ESG is today an infant. It's new. It needs to learn, to grow, to experiment, and within time to reach a certain maturity and stability that we have already know and faced with financial reporting. So mastering data collection, data control, and reporting for all those non-financial metrics will take time to be reached, but it will become essential in the same time to ensure some competitive advantage. So I explain, when everyone, and we all believe that the majority of asset managers will come to, let's say, use the ESG criteria as a big criteria in their investment decision, then how to make the difference between all of them? The data is one of the elements that could make the difference, mastering the data. So then they will be able to differentiate. I would state even that it's not even the golden age, but I think in the next some years it will be like the gold rush, you know, that we faced 117 years ago in California. So, but that will be the gold rush for data. So, just to finish on this, I think that the challenge here is to run faster than the other ones, and better to develop the most relevant set of non-financial data, and more mastering the ability to collect it properly And that will mobilize energy, people, resources, and that will not take 6 months.
You compare the quest for data to the gold rush. Is this a fight?
I think absolutely, and it's already a fight. It's already a war. Let's call it the data war. I mean, the point, it has already begun, because you have seen a lot of major financial data provider and even new major player in non-financial data providing just emerging. And those global players, whatever, from Morningstar, Bloomberg, Thomson Reuters, Sustainalytics, and all those global players have well understood the potential benefit of expanding into non-financial data. And they've developed their offer to the market. Stefan has just said very, very truly, the problem is that methodologies are different. Benchmarks may be different, so who to believe, how to select it, and so for the moment we just use many of them. So the challenge behind all those initiatives will be to ensure at the end of the journey that the frameworks and the methodology are comparable and transparent, at least that we can easily understand why results could be different according to the global framework used. Today, we have seen statistics that say that results can vary up to 50% depending on the framework used. So harmonization will be a key for the future.
Definitely. This being said, what are, according to you, today's challenges in ESG implementation?
Well, we need to see that there is three positions here. There is the asset manager position, there is the manager of the asset, also, which is a little bit different, and the investor, whoever it is, institutional or public. So if I look to some questions and concerns that we should find answer to at the asset manager level is, for example, what do I have to monitor and implement to be ESG compliant, which was basically what Stefan was talking about, taxonomies, regulations, and so on and so forth. We could also ask the question, how to compare between my assets? Because there is heated debate now about comparability. Do we have to compare between assets? Can we compare between assets? Will it be possible to do so? The third one, for example, they could raise as concern is how to ensure that true and quality data is provided by companies. Because it's great to rely on data, but how to control the reality of this data. And it's even more than that, because when we talk about adverse impact, it's not only do we get the right data, but do we get the data on what we should get the data on? And that's a little bit different. So at companies level, for example, we can answer some concerns, and that are the challenges. What should we measure? I would like to come back to what Stefan said. My opinion, having worked a lot with the underlying assets, so the companies in alternatives, this is also a strategic project for a company to implement non-financial reporting. We are very well done in financial reporting. Since 20 years, we have implemented things like balanced scorecard, which was enlarging the reporting abilities. And now we would like to implement non-financial reporting. It is a strategic project for a company, and that is a challenge. And the way, in my opinion, to cope it, of course, could be through voting rights. But the best would be through collaboration between the asset manager and the manager of the asset to make that strategic intent align. Because I truly believe to speed up the process that alignment will be necessary. So companies would also say, okay, how to build an ESG reporting that helps not only my investor, but would help also my organization. I mean, the aggregated metrics that we could provide to the market is certainly not usable in all the departments of a company and all the subsidiaries of a company. It needs to be at another granular level. And of course, a company needs to know how to build a data repository that is really reliable. And if we look to the investor's level, I mean, we have challenges too. How am I sure that my investments are ESG compliant? I mean, okay, it is said so, but how do I control the reality of that? Where comes from the data? What is the quality of the data? What is the reliability of it? And then it raises the next challenge, how to select my future investment knowing that. So there are many, many challenges at the players level.
And if we focus on the data level, what would be, according to you, the main challenges and rules to consider?
So yeah, here I would say that again I will just talk about at the asset level, I would say. There are many rules. I would not go in detail to everything, but there are many rules and some are more important. And the first one is monitoring what matters. I mean, since 20 years I was teaching about reporting in business school, and I was looking to the works of very, very well established companies, and we are monitoring from time to time things that have absolutely no use. And when you look to the percentage of reporting used, it's maybe 50-60%. So the first thing is that when we enter into this kind of project of building a non-financial reporting plan, as this is a strategic project, we need to define what really matters. What do we want to measure? We have said for the moment it's the E part that is mainly measured, but why maybe we would like to measure the G part, the governance part. When we talk about gender equality, for example, it's very simple to put measurement and metrics over gender equality, so why not doing it? And the answer is very simple, because we don't want to do it in a strategic plan. That's the point. For societal, I would say another thing that is a little bit more complicated. But first, monitor what matters to you. And the matters to you is maybe to you or to your investors, and both can be compatible. To do that, you have, of course, Stefan told it also, existing taxonomies, as well as benchmark and labels. That's great. Again, at asset management level, it's great. It eases your work and it helps you. At companies level, it's very interesting, but it's not usable. And that's not the purpose of it. I mean, it's just something to guide you into what you should, let's say, have as an outcome. But at company's level, it needs to be more detailed, to be usable by everyone and accepted by everyone. So the first challenge here is then to try to measure what really matters. And to do so, this requires launching a real strategic project within the organization. The second one is ensure data consistency. It's very nice to have data, but if the data is not replicable, it's not consistent, it's not comparable, then you will face a problem for the analysis. I don't mind if you want, I mean, I have no feelings, neither bad or good feelings about the fact that you may just want to be ESG compliant and put that on your website. I mean, okay, great. I mean, I think every small step is a good step. So that's the point. But if you want something that is really used and be able to be developed in a good way when regulation will be more stringent and when the investor will be more requiring, then you need to ensure that data consistency from the beginning. Let's have an example about water consumption. You talk about oceans, I will talk also about water if you don't mind. At the asset manager level, the ratio between water consumed and recycled could be interesting. And it's very interesting. At company level, I mean, if there are, let's say, 12 sub-processes and each sub-process is consuming water, you don't care about the global view. You want to have the specialized view. You will have a ratio about consumed water and recycled water per sub-process. So that's a way to align the interest of the asset manager and the manager of the asset. So the third one is you have to monitor what is material. Don't make ratios to monitor peanuts things. I'm really sorry to tell that way. But that's why usually in projects we build what we call a materiality matrix. So we have seen all the elements we would like in the strategic project to measure, and then we decide which one is the more relevant in the first phase. Because we have also to remind that the scope of ESG is pretty large. And it's very, very much larger than financial reporting, so we need to make priority. The fourth one is data needs to be qualitative, recurring, stable, and replicable. There is one very well-known rule in the data world since decades, which is called GIGO. I usually make a joke because it's GIGO is like for lamb, and I make a joke with cooking. I will not have the time today. But anyway, the GIGO principle is very interesting. It's garbage in, garbage out. In every intelligent system that is using data, when you enter crap data, don't expect to get out good results. So we'll only get crap results. That's why, again, small steps are better than being willing to be perfect. You certainly have to decide which data you are totally sure it's reliable and stable and use them, and maybe not having all the reporting you like. And this, the next step maybe is to improving another data source. Then the fifth one is monitoring what you can influence at the asset level. I'm talking about the asset level. I mean, I've seen reporting where the ECB interest rate was a ratio in reporting. Well, I'm very happy that someone can influence that, but that's a rule. I mean, you just monitor what you can influence, because then you can give responsibilities and someone can be objectivized on the improvement of the ratio. A comment, no, because data can be very deceptive. One of the biggest challenges I see in the next years is to find intelligent and, efficient ways to control the data that will be provided up the value chain. Because the data now that we are talking about is not only the company data, it will be also the stakeholders' data. So you will ask your supplier as a company to give you data that will allow you to build your own ratio and to prove that you are ESG compliant. So it means it's not only your own responsibility, it's the responsibility of someone else. You have no influence in it, which is a little bit contradictory to my previous principle, but that is an obligation here. So everything relies on trust and control. So what I'm expecting as regulation in the future on that field is to have more stringent obligation of auditing for data and publicity of and transparency of those auditing. Last one, I think it will be for, let's say, longer future, but usually we say in modern reporting that we should try to have as much predictive data as possible. It's very interesting to see and to monitor the past. It's tremendously more interesting to monitor the future. So in my water consumption example, of course, I can give the water consumption and the recycling, but if I could put, you know, some indicator, some metrics that says those are the triggers to the water consumption, then we are beginning to be predictive. What is interesting in being predictive is that the people that will be able to do so, they will be ahead in terms of investment selection and looking what kind of risk and reputational risk that could come. And that's very important to build that in the reporting.
Thank you, Philippe. So that's where the seven golden rules to consider when implementing ESG. I'd have a last question for you, Philippe. What is the parallel between financial and ESG reporting in the end?
Well, Julie, I think I said it a little bit before, ESG reporting is a child, is an infant, when financial reporting is a very mature and adult person. Also, financial reporting relies on very detailed accounting techniques, comparable since years, quite adaptable between geographical areas and comparable between them, and used by every company to report by every investor to analyze an asset. So we have a common ground that is used since years. That is a big challenge for the ESG part, of course. So as it is stable in time, repeatable, comparable, and quite qualitative, and also thanks to the auditing obligation and all the professional standards that has been put on top of that, there is no perfect system. And we have seen with a lot of cases that even financial reporting can be deceiving, but it's a very, very small margin of it. So the second wave was 20 years ago. I was teaching 15 years ago balanced scorecard. So balanced scorecard was invented by Kaplan and Norton and was a way to present reporting with very, very with metrics that were not only financial, so marketing metrics, sales metrics, HR metrics. It has been pushed since 20 years. It has become whatever the name we take. There are many other theories of this kind of reporting, but at the end of the day, it's 20 years it has been pushed in the companies. So there is a background there. So because of that, a certain level of robustness and stability has been reached and has been proven. And then we come to the next wave. The next wave is this pure from qualitative, subjective and quantitative reporting that will be embedded in this non-financial reporting for ESG purpose. And that is covering so much larger areas and metrics. So again, then it will be, I think, the same path. We will come to something robust, but it will take time.